This podcast is sponsored by ebookit.com, self-publishing solutions for the independent author and small press. Visit us today at ebookit.com.
Welcome to the Toastmasters podcast, the official podcast of Toastmasters International. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the latest edition of the Toastmasters podcast. My name is Greg Gazin, and we have an incredible guest today. Our guest today is Mr. Peter Kosowin. He's from District 42 in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. He's a distinguished Toastmaster and a past district governor, a retired financial planner after 55 years on the job, and he has a history of community service, working with over 80 nonprofit organizations, including the United Way and the Canadian Cancer Society. But Toastmasters is Peter's passion. He's a member of three clubs, including one that bears his name. And in February, Peter celebrated 45 years as a Toastmaster. He's been awarded a plethora of awards, including two presidential citations from Toastmasters International. And one of his accomplishments is helping District 42 Toastmasters partner with the City of Edmonton to have Toastmasters as moderators at the civic election forums. Although retired, Peter's calendar always seems to be full, visiting upwards of 300 clubs a year, not to mention demo meetings and manning the trade booths. Peter is anywhere there is potential to gain new members or create new clubs. In fact, Peter has a passion for building clubs, having chartered 164 clubs and counting. But Peter also takes the time to help individuals one-on-one to help them find their voice and fulfill their potential. In fact, one individual, now a longtime friend and fellow Toastmaster, credits Peter with helping him conquer the fear of public speaking, help him forge forward with his communication and his leadership skills. Some of you may recognize the name, 1993-1994, past international president, Neil Wilkinson. Welcome, Peter.
Nice to be on board.
Glad to have you. 45 years. 45 years. Now, I understand that there's a funny story how you got started.
Well, I happened to have a business associate that was being transferred. There was a party, a farewell party for this individual. We happened to be there, and one of his friends was a banjo picker. And I happened to have a little bit of music in my bones, and we ended up jamming. And within a week, I got a phone call from this individual, and he asked to have coffee. And of course, we met at a coffee shop, and I looked at his Toastmaster pin when those pins had a T in it, and it was inverted. And I said, oh, you belong to the Lions Club, because the T inverted looked like an L. And he said, no, it's Toastmasters. And that's the way I got introduced to Toastmasters in 1970.
Did he feel you needed Toastmasters, or did you feel you needed Toastmasters at the time?
Absolutely. I had to repeat my icebreaker. That's an indication of how poorly I was in the way of communication and confidence and things like that. So it worked out well.
You must have had a tough evaluator.
Yes, I did. Still a friend.
I like that word. Is that friend in quotes?
Yes.
Now, people feel that you need a work-life balance. 164 clubs, 300 visits a year, but yet you say that Toastmasters still isn't your number one priority, although important?
It's important. It would rank somewhere along the way, but my first interest and my first goal all year round is really my own well-being, my health. I'm a cancer survivor, a bypass survivor, and to me, I do not take on anything that conflicts with my daily exercise routine, so I make sure that that happens. If someone wants to see me, it'll have to be after my exercise programs are over. So my number one priority is my own health.
And your number two priority?
My number two priority is my family. You know, I have a daughter and two grandchildren, and to me, that's where my focus comes at my age.
Toastmasters has been a common thread in your family.
It has. It wasn't long before my wife became a Toastmaster, and then when my daughter reached maturity, matter of fact, she was a youth leadership participant, and she became a Toastmaster as well. So those are the only two people in my household at that time, and they were both Toastmasters.
Now, I understand that your wife put on quite a Toastmasters event.
She did. In my estimation, and I don't know of any other, she directed the fall conference in, I believe, 1991, and we had 747 people register for the conference, which I believe is a record. It certainly is a record in District 42.
And at that time, do you recall about how many clubs there were in the district?
There would have been, maybe 100, about 100 clubs, maybe a little bit more than 100 clubs. Let's say 150. But we also had a number one attraction, and that was a speaker from Virginia, and one of our Toastmaster members flew her in from another engagement, and that really solidified. But the entire committee worked at recruiting members to register for Toastmasters. So we hosted it in Edmonton in 1991.
Did you not find it difficult to continue with Toastmasters after your wife passed away?
No, matter of fact, it was an enticement for me to just go out and do things. You have to fill in that void time. And I've made Toastmasters my venue for continuing to touch base with people and with friends. That helped make that an adjustment accordingly.
In fact, in the newspaper, in a recent article, you were featured in an article with a picture of you and a whole bunch of awards. And I understand, just to read it here, it says, you were once asked what you wanted carved on your tombstone. And what was that?
Well, that happened on the basis that I received an award from the corporation that I worked with, the North American Award. And they asked me, what drives you? What makes you do the things that you do? And I said, well, I really don't know at this moment, but I'll give you the answer tomorrow morning. And I came back tomorrow morning, the next morning, and said, I've been an admirer of Bernard Shaw, and he makes the statement, my life belongs to the community. If I were to have an epitaph engraved, it would be born to serve.
Wow.
And that is the real key to my existence. Is I'm still here at this age. I'm here to serve.
And that you certainly do. And I know that not only our district and Toastmasters International and probably all the members that you've helped are probably very grateful for that. I was just thinking, the next time I get a tough question in table topics, I'm going to say, I'll let you know tomorrow morning. No, I'm just kidding. Peter, you've created community clubs, corporate clubs, and even ones in penitentiaries. Now, I know it wouldn't be fair for me to ask you what your favorite club was, because that would probably be like having to select one from amongst all your 164 children. Perhaps you can share with me one that might be one of the most memorable.
They're all memorable. They're all different. And it's taught me to be patient. For an example, right now, I'm in the process of helping create a club for brain injury and stroke patients. But one of the most rewarding, it's not that it's a favorite, but one of my most rewarding clubs that I've had a chance to develop is one for young people or for adults that have learning challenges. It's changed the entire culture of this nonprofit organization. It's given a voice for those who never had a voice in the past. And it's absolutely thrilling to see how they come out of their shell and become the kind of people that they want to be.
Feel free to mention the name of the club and anything else that you want to share about it.
That club tends to be the Chrysalis Social Butterflies. And I know that the mentors of the club, it's changed their life as well. I believe that Toastmasters is a two-way street. We make a contribution to someone else's development, but we in turn learn something from that engagement with that club. And to me, the Chrysalis Toastmaster Club was just so visual in the fact that we gave them a voice, and they are proud people today simply because they can be heard.
And I understand that Chrysalis, it's an organization for individuals with special needs, and the club is made up of clients, employees, and his family members as well?
Exactly, exactly.
Excellent.
Now, let me just give you a little bit of a blurb here. One of the ladies had a story, and it was a fundraising free breakfast, and her story generated $145,000 contribution to the association. Can you imagine a young lady giving a story and being able to generate, with 300 people in attendance, generate $145,000?
Now, was she an individual with special needs?
Yes, she was, and a member of Toastmasters.
Now, obviously, with 164 clubs, you couldn't do it all yourself. How do you put together your teams? What's the special sauce or special secret that you do to help make these things move forward?
There's just no doubt I have to pay tribute to a number of people. I happen to be so fortunate. Many of the people that I've met in Toastmasters, I've befriended, and we've become understanding of each other's needs and so on. I have, I would say, about 10 to 12 experienced Toastmasters that when I have a potential demo meeting, I will call them and say, you know, are you able to make this meeting? And if you are, what role do you want to play? Do you want to play the role of a Toastmaster, the chairman, the topic master, the evaluator, whatever the case may be? And collectively, they put the plan together. They take the choice, and it's usually rotating. It's not one person doing the one job. And so I can call them. I said, here's what we have. And they're there to back me up and to provide that kind of guidance. I don't have to tell them what to do because they know what their role is. It's absolutely gratifying to know that we have that kind of support.
I also understand that you put a little of your sales skills to work. At the end of a demo meeting, you have a call for action.
Absolutely. And I find, you know, other people serve in the role of a chairman. I usually serve in the role of a chairman at those demo meetings, and we leave about, hopefully, anywhere from 25 minutes to questions and answers. And if we are not able to respond, if we're not able to respond to the questions, or if they're not able to ask those questions, you'll never be able to make a sale. So we exhaust all of the questions from the audience, and then we come up with a statement saying, how many of you are prepared to support the creation of a Toastmaster Club? And I put my hand up, and in most cases, I would say that 75% of the people in attendance will do likewise. And that gives us the direction to keep on going. Otherwise, if there was no interest, I have other things to do. I have no time to spend with a club that is not going to flourish.
Absolutely. And it's certainly understanding, because sometimes it does happen that a club is just not meant to be. But I'm sure that you probably have a whole bunch of others on the go.
Mm-hmm.
You build a lot of clubs. What do you feel is the secret of maintaining a club, keeping a club strong and healthy?
There's just no doubt in my mind there are a number of topics that are part of this. Number one is commitment by the people, especially by the leaders, and training would be the second point. I find that very many Toastmasters are in need of information to become effective leaders. We get through TLI and other sources, we get all kinds of hints on leadership, and it's leadership and commitment. I also believe in quality. I was at a Toastmaster meeting four of them yesterday, but one of them was an evening club, a brand new club, and we need to elevate the quality of the performance. You know, we have to learn that these people are brand new, but at the same time, there's a certain kinds of protocol and so on that should be followed to give them direction, to give them guidance. It's not to give them instructions all the time, but it's to give them guidance on how they can improve their meeting and their quality of meeting. Even the such simple things as location of a speaker, the speakers, and the Toastmaster, to learn how to move people to save time, because time is precious, and we need to save this time. And I would share that kind of information with them, hopefully that they would put into use those kinds of hints.
I fully understand that. In fact, sometimes people complain about, well, why do I need to go to training twice a year? I've already done it once. Why do I have to do it twice? And I understand in our previous conversation that you've been sergeant at arms maybe close to 20 times, but yet you still go to training twice a year every time you take on a role.
Absolutely. There's two avenues there as well. Number one is the fact that there are new ideas coming forward and you can acquire those new ideas. Matter of fact, I'm currently the sergeant at arms at the club that bears my name. And I try to make that part of the meeting extremely important. And one of my roles would be to elevate the energy level at that meeting. One of the ladies that is a member there said the reason she's at my club is because we accepted her coming in. We took her coat and hung up her coat and things like this. And so you want to make your guest as comfortable as possible. To me, going to a KLI or a club officer's training is vitally important. Even though you've been there before, you can also share some of your information with those new sergeant at arms or club officers, whoever they might be.
Peter, you're certainly an inspiration. I love the fact that you mentioned the word energy, and yet you're in your 80s. That's incredibly awesome. I'm going to ask you one last question, Peter. What advice would you give to today's leaders to help empower their teams to help grow the next generation of leaders?
I'm of the firm opinion that in many situations, it's building relationships within the organization. Let's say a club executive gets to learn who we are individually and learn how to work together for the good of the club. And when you're working for the good of the club, you're working for the individual members to make them more productive, more knowledgeable in whatever field. It takes that relationship building. If you don't have an understanding of each other and our values, it makes it difficult to work together as a team. Yet we need to put aside some of our biases and just move ahead and say, we're looking, the mission is to empower others, and what can we do to empower others in developing their communication and leadership skills?
Peter Kosowin, thank you very much for your time. I look forward to hearing about your 50th anniversary and your 200th Toastmasters Club.
Thank you so much, and you be there.
Isn't it about time you published that book you've been thinking about? We can help with that. At ebookit.com, we've been providing authors and small presses with ebook publishing services since 2010. Visit us today at ebookit.com and let us know how we can help you.